I am David Lowry, appearing on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Krucek. I was here at Ninth Circuit 6 months or a year ago for an argument, and it happened to be the day that the assisted suicide law was here for argument. One of the members of the panel commented that he wanted the lawyer to talk about jurisdiction, saying that we know all the lawyers hate jurisdiction, but we have to deal with it, so please talk about it. I have the reverse situation today because I brought you an equal protection issue. And I think equal protection is an argument that all the lawyers love and all the judges hate. So I'm the mean lawyer that's brought you the issue you don't really want to have. At TR, at transcript or excerpt page 160, there's a letter I sent to the ALJ before the hearing saying I want a medical advisor. Because we need a medical advisor if we are to carry our burden of proof for purposes of equaling the listings. Because the commissioner requires that the ALJ receive the testimony of a medical advisor if there is going to be a finding that someone does equal the listings. This court in previous decisions in Lester and Schneider has pointed out very good ways for claimants to demonstrate that they meet or equal listings. It will all be for naught if there is no medical advisor present because the commissioner will not allow the ALJ to find someone equals the listings.
Proffer as to how your client met the listings?
The client was retarded, and
But in terms of the technical problem, which as I understand is a set of criteria that you have to fit into, did you ever make a proffer as to how you fit?
I don't quite understand your question.
Well, my understanding is that this isn't just a sort of vague question of you have these characteristics, that you have to demonstrate that you equal certain listings. Did you ever say what listing you equaled or how you equaled them?
No.
So what's good with the medical examiner then to confirm or deny something you never made?
Well, one of the problems in that approach is, well, I could say that we think we equal the mental listings. There's no guarantee that the theory of the medical expert would be the same as my theory. They might have a completely different theory. And I've had that happen at hearings, too, where the judge and I think it's an orthopedic case and the ME decides it's a neurological case. There's no way to be sure what the medical advisor will seize on as significant.
After he wasn't there, in order for us to evaluate whether it mattered that he wasn't there, we have to have some idea what it is that you are claiming is the listing that you were equivalent to, so we can see whether there's any chance that you could have succeeded with this.
Well, it would be the mental listings under the B criteria. Just the whole theory of the Lester case would apply here, too. There's testimony about anger control problems that would go on for hours, that would affect social functioning, that would affect activities of daily living, that would affect concentration, persistence, or pace. Those could be thought of as episodes of deterioration, all the elements of the B criteria. There's a reference in the questionnaire the doctor filled out for me with overwhelming depression being a problem that is so severe as to keep the person from working at all. The psychological part of the case, although not developed as well as it might be had he gotten better treatment, is nonetheless well-developed enough, and with the lay evidence thrown on, too, it just adds to it. But there can be no finding that somebody equals a listing without the commissioner or without the ALJ receiving medical testimony. The ALJ has a stranglehold on whether there's going to be an ME there or not. Yet we're the ones with the burden of proof at steps 1, 2, 3, and 4. And at step 3, while we could equal the listings and prove our case, the judge has the ability to prevent us from equaling the listings by refusing to bring on an ME. Because if there's no ME testimony, it doesn't matter. We could introduce evidence from now till doomsday on equaling the listings, and the ALJ could not and would not be allowed to find equaling. Because the volume of evidence that might point in that direction would be meaningless. The JLJ would be powerless to do it. And we are effectively denied the right to equal the listings if the ALJ decides he's not going to call an ME so we can do that. And in that letter I sent, one of the things I said is, if you won't call an ME to help me equal the listings at step three, then I object to you calling a VE to carry the commissioner's burden of proof at step five. If the, and this case was decided at step five. So if the commissioner's burden of proof at step five were disregarded, and we took the position that since you didn't call the ME, you can't call the VE either, then we would win, and the whole case would be over at that point. We just have no way of carrying our burden of proof without the commissioner or the ALJ calling the ME. We've got to have that to win. And we've got plenty of facts on mental here to equal, if not meet, the B criteria. But if there's no ME there, we're not going to be allowed to do it without regard to how strong or weak the case is. We could have affidavit from the Pope, and it wouldn't make any difference. We would still be unsuccessful in equaling the listings because having the ME there is the sine qua non of equaling the listings. You can't equal the listings without having the ME. And for that reason, I would request that you...
On what do you base your contention that he was required to call the ME?
It's a program requirement, and it's set forth in that letter at TR1. I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you.
Under what is it a program requirement?
Well, just a second. It's in the letter at TR-160. It'll be in SSR 96-6P. Provides in part, however, longstanding policy requires the judgment of a physician or psychologist on the issue of equivalence of on the evidence must be received. That's set out in page 160 in the transcript in the letter I sent in requesting the ME. And you can find the discussion of the law about that there. And that's what I brought you today, and I think I'll sit down.
Thank you, Kent.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Jeffrey Baird, representing the Commissioner. The state agency physicians reporting at pages 394 to 415 reviewed the record as a whole and fulfilled the commissioner's obligation under 96-6P that a medical expert review the evidence. After that, plaintiff's own treating physician presented the critical evidence in Exhibit 16F, which translates to roughly page 550, where he outlines very precise limitations and says, with low stress work, the plaintiff can work. So the only role for a medical expert, and I always like them, but ALJs often have a burden with their scheduling, so they don't call them all the time. It is discretionary. The discretion is given in, I believe I cited in my brief, in 404.15.27. Otherwise, 96-6P requires the state agency physicians. They did go through this record. There was no particular deterioration after their report in December of 1999, and they didn't find anything at the listings level. So that is really not an issue for the court, it seems to me. The medical expert would have been discretionary at this point. Also, Mr. Lowry hasn't given us a theory of how the impairments combine to meet or equal the listings. Under Lewis versus Apfel, I believe I cited in the red brief, there has to be some plausible theory put forward to how the listings might work.
Change from this problem to another. What did the ALJ do with the hypothetical with the mental impairments?
Right. The ALJ said reduced it to simple repetitive work, I believe.
But he didn't really deal with concentration issues as such.
Well, but he put it in work-like terms, in terms that the VE could respond to.
But wasn't the VE when later asked whether he could do it if he couldn't have problems concentrating, said no?
No. Specifically, Mr. Lowry asked the VE, what about 16F? What about Exhibit 16F, those limitations? And the VE said, same jobs. So that did include a reference to low stress, for example, and it did include Dr. Chestnut's concerns about medication, the Sylert. He felt it was very effective, and it provided a basis to be able to go to work.
He also said that he couldn't take it, didn't take it, partly because of concern about physical side effects and also because of his mental, his ADHD sort of detail issues.
Right. Dr. Chestnut expressed concern that the plaintiff might forget or might be distracted from taking it.
I thought he said he wasn't taking it because
he No, he said he needed to take it.
I'm sorry?
I believe, Your Honor, Dr. Chestnut said when he takes it, he can work and he needs to take it.
He didn't take it.
Well, I guess I'd have to look exactly at page 550 or whatever it was. He said he wasn't currently working, but he didn't say he couldn't work.
He didn't really say that either. That's a very ambiguous statement as to what he said about that.
Just said not currently.
Not currently what? Not currently not working or not currently yes working? Or
I think the easiest reading is not currently working. But the limitations were set forth if he's on Sylert, low-stress jobs, a range of light work. That's all spelled out there. The concern was that he might not take his medication when he needed to. Interestingly enough, plaintiff admitted at the hearing, first of all, that he felt he could do sheet metal work. That's on transcript 72 or ER 70. He said the only reason he wasn't working is because he was going to school and...
Dr. Chestnut said there was noncompliance with medication regime secondary to inattention to detail. And he also said that it was difficult to maintain compliance with medication with significant side effects. And apparently Sylert does have significant side effects.
Well, it
can. And he claimed to testify that he wasn't taking it because of the side effect.
Right, but he also testified on page 90 and 91 that he was enjoying school and doing very well at school, and he was being given job offers, and he said he could go to work, except that he was doing all this hard work and schooling. And that was when he was off the Sylert. But I think you're not reading Exhibit 16F the best, most accurate way. He can work when he's on the site.
It says, so it must be accurate because I read literally the words.
Well, he also says he can work at a low-stress job when he's on the Sylert. So the question is, will he take it or not? And we do have the lay testimony from his mother, for example, saying sometimes he doesn't. And then the plaintiff's own testimony is that he stopped, but he still continued his schooling, and it seems to be very successful anyway.
Counsel, the Sylert addresses the ADHD, is that correct?
Right.
Are there alternatives to Sylert that you could take?
I'm not a doctor to say that. They did try some various medications, and Sylert was the most effective for this claimant. There may be others. In any event, the vocational expert responding to the limitations set forth in 16F said, same jobs. And the claimant worked like a hero at his schooling, 4 to 10 every night, taped classes, had small group sessions, was getting welding clerkship offers, so to speak. So whatever else is going on, as the mother said, when he wants to do something, he does it well. And it looks like he did. With that, I have nothing more, Your Honor.
Thank you, sir.
I found counsel's reference to the Sylert at page 90. That's where the claimant testified that it seemed to work for a while, and then they told me to stop taking it because it would give me liver failure and kidney problems, so I've stopped taking it. With regard to what the treating physician...
Whose testimony is this?
Claimant's.
Okay, he said that he had liver failure or that he feared liver failure?
He said he was taking it, and it worked for a while, and he was told to stop taking it because
they told me to stop taking it because it would give me liver failure and kidney problems. So I've stopped taking it.
Yeah.
Who's they?
Presumably the doctors. Some doctor or medical person. No one questioned that at the hearing, but the doctor would be the only person to logically say that to him, I would think. His doctor in the questionnaire, counsel says his doctor said he could work, but his doctor, while checking capable of low-stress jobs, add a notation in one spot up where he could have checked incapable of even low stress jobs, saying without medication or intermittent with regular medication. So apparently his ability to work with regular medication would have been intermittent. The doctor also says at page 553, inability to focus, ADHD, and noncompliance with medication regime secondary to inattention to detail. Depression has been severe and incapacitating. And then farther down the page, severe ADHD and depression, difficult to control on medication and difficult to maintain compliance on medication with significant side effects. So it sounds like it's not the problem of the claimant being difficult or recalcitrant. It's just it's difficult. His condition is difficult to successfully treat. And his not taking medicine is related to the side effects, all of which is independent of the more difficult equal protection issue that counsel didn't talk about very much.
What about the welding school? What a counsel says that he was able to do very well at welding, that he went to the courses, took them all successfully, and would have been able to get a job at welding.
As I recall it, the claimant was doing that 4 to 6 hours a day. He would take breaks. There was never anything from that that was equivalent to an 8-hour day, 40 hours a week. The fact that he had some success in the classwork, learning how to weld, would be kind of interesting and promising, but still doesn't get us to the finish line there.
Welding is something that somebody who was inattentive to detail was going to do very well at.
No, eventually.
Somewhat dangerous.
Yeah, eventually there would be a problem. Because of the concentration and the ADHD, eventually.
You would be doing okay if you hadn't burned anything up yet, or as far as we could tell.
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing
you. Seems to be doing okay at it, and I assume that includes that he hadn't burned anything up yet.
Well, he seemed to be doing okay in the classroom context.
Well, he says he took welding for 3 terms. It was a 1-term class. It took me 3 terms to get it down, but after the 3rd term. I got it down real good, and it's just the way I learn. It takes me 2 times, 3 times to do something before I get it. So it would take me 4 years to get a 2-year degree. Where does that, assume all of that's correct, what does that mean as far as being able to do a less difficult job?
Well, the vocational expert did not identify welding as one of the jobs he might be able to do. So it's difficult to extrapolate that over to something else, because of the welding could have been something done in, you do it for a minute or two, and then you do something else for a minute or two. There was no attempt to translate that over to some other kind of occupation where the physical aspects or the mental aspects might not be the same. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case just argued will be submitted. The next case for argument is Ledesma Galicia versus Alberto Gonzalez.